powered from the Sereno Cigar Company Studios in North Carolina and broadcasting from the Ventura Cigar Company Studio in California. It's episode 111 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, we welcome Eric Wentworth of Hammer and Sickle Cigars. In our Alec Bradley Live True segment, we'll discuss theme parks. And in our deliberation segment, Aaron and I will talk about why 2019 might be a down year for the cigar industry. And as always, the Primetime Show is sponsored by Saga Cigars, makers of the Golden Age cigar. The Golden Age is a cigar that takes you back to the classic days of cigar smoking. Through six generations of experience by the Reyes family, the Saga Golden Age delivers a timeless blend that uses the nobility of the tobacco to bring you the perfect balance of power and flavor. It narrates better than words the history of a family's tradition in tobacco, delivering a cigar much like the ones they used to smoke during the times of Hemingway. Saga Golden Age is a full body, full flavored Dominican Puro. With tobaccos from home farm, the blend features a Corojo 2006 wrapper and filler from the original Cuban seeds grown in the Dominican Republic. Available in four sizes at an affordable price, Saga Golden Age is sure to please and take you back on a journey to yesteryear. And by Perdomo Cigars, awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has been consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan sun-grown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautiful barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company with headquarters in Miami, Florida, and manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, Perdomo Double Age 12-Year Vintage, Perdomo 20th Anniversary, Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Villiger Cigars. Since 1888, Villiger Cigars have been experts in everything tobacco, including offering a wide range of premium cigars for all connoisseurs. Villiger's La Vencedora, which translates to the Victor, is the first ever full-bodied Villiger cigar, and it carries a special meaning to Villiger chairman of the board, Heinrich Villiger. The Villiger La Vencedora, or the Victor, represents to Mr. Villiger the arrival of Villiger cigars to the premium handmade cigar segment. It was time, in his opinion, to push the envelope and create a legacy cigar that will serve as a proper follow-up to the acclaimed Villiger La Floridian Glam brand. This Nicaraguan Puro is wrapped in a beautiful Nicaraguan Habano Oscuro wrapper, boasting potent, full-bodied smoking experience and featuring highly seasoned and hearty flavors. Be sure to ask your retailer for La Vencedora, and you can visit Villiger's entire line of premium cigars at www.villigercigars.com. And by Drew Estate, check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And this live stream is brought to you thanks to Drew Estate. Welcome, everybody, to Primetime Episode 111 for this Thursday, September 26, 2019. It's Will Cooper. I am in the Sereno Cigar Company studios, joined, as always, cross-country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
How you doing tonight, Will?
Doing good, doing good. So I saw you were tuned into the Tuesday night show.
I was.
I didn't know where you were tuned in from.
Yeah, I was tuned in from Roma Craft Tobacco headquarters in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, which was, I forgot you were going to be there. Yeah,
yeah. It was good getting to kind of watch it as a group.
Yeah,
doing commentary during the show and all that kind of stuff. So that was a fun time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all I kept thinking is Skip must just be torturing him about the show. Blaming you.
Yeah, we had lots of discussions going on during the show.
Oh, I could tell. But I think it was like we figured it out. I figured it. I think Bear knew, but I didn't figure it out till like about an hour into the show that you were there. Yeah. But
yeah, it was a really fun time. Awesome. All the guys over there are great.
That's all. I've never been to Austin.
Yeah, you should go sometime.
Yeah, I shouldn't say. I passed through once. I did pass through once. Yeah. I shouldn't say. I did pass through. I was outside of Austin, but I've never been in Austin proper, I should say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we got a great
show. Doesn't count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we got a great show tonight. I've been wanting to get this gentleman on the show for a while. I know we try to few times to make it work, and we finally had our schedules aligned. And I'm pleased to welcome Mr. Eric Wentworth of Hammer and Sickle Cigars to the Primetime Show. Eric, welcome to Primetime.
Thank you. Glad we could finally do this. It's definitely been a few months in the making.
Yeah, definitely for sure. And I know the first time I missed an email from you, unfortunately, I felt very bad. And we had it basically, we had that date open, and then it was unfortunately how schedules go, it was too late. So I know then IPCPR came around and, you know, summer, et cetera. So we finally were able to make this happen.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Been wanting to do this for a while and, you know, love your show. You guys are awesome.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And, you know, I know I haven't gotten up to New Hampshire really in a long time, probably since before you were at Hammer and Sickle. I'm planning something next year, finally, it looks like. So, okay. So that may the stars are going to align for that.
Very nice. You got to let me know if you do.
Absolutely. But I know we do appreciate the time. We know it's late as well, but we'll get right into things right now. So, Eric, for folks who may not know you, tell us a little about before you even got into the cigar industry, how did you get started smoking cigars?
I got into smoking cigars just playing golf with my dad and uncles, and they would always smoke on the course. And finally, I came of age, I guess, and they let me have one, and I fell in love on the spot.
What kind of cigar was it?
So the first cigar I smoked was actually a Partagas Series S. So wow. Like a little Figurado thing.
Yeah.
And then my second cigar was an Acid Cuba Cuba and did not enjoy that one.
but you went back, you went to a third cigar, which was good news.
Correct. And I was hooked.
Right.
And I didn't realize how expensive it was until my dad stopped paying for them.
There you go. you know, I was reading something today, right? It was, I don't know, something with the news with Rudy Giuliani, right? And I don't know, I happened to Google something. I see is like one of his ex-wives was like complaining he spent $12,000 a year on cigars.
Yeah.
And I looked at that, I'm like, is that really that's not really a big number when you think about it and you do the math. If you smoke three cigars a day, it's not that high.
Yeah.
But it was actually made to be a big deal, yeah.
I mean, you got to think about it. He's probably getting a lot of cigars for free too. So
yeah.
He's smoking a good amount a year. That's for sure.
And he's getting good stuff for free.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. But there was a point where I guess you made a transition into the cigar industry. Now, were you doing anything else before you were in the cigar industry?
So before the cigar industry, I kind of dabbled in jewelry sales. I also did carpentry, built stairs and stuff like that with my father. Didn't like any of that. So, when I got into the industry, I'm originally from Connecticut, moved up to Massachusetts, New Hampshire area with my wife, and didn't have a job, walked into a store to buy cigars and left with the job.
And that was with Dave, right?
That was at Two Guys. Yeah.
Okay.
And so that was about 10 years ago now. So it's amazing how the time goes by. It's insane.
Yep. And then, I guess it's funny. My son worked retail for a couple of years as well. It's a job, you know, he kind of got hooked on it really easy.
Yeah. The cigar industry is just fun, man. I fell in love with it right away and, you know, would never really expect to be in the spot I am today now, but you know, everything. I don't know. I was going to say everything worked out, but not truly, I guess.
right. Yeah. No, understandable. So there was a point you were working in Two Guys, and then there was a point you got obviously hooked up with Hammer and Sickle. How did that work out?
So the offices for Hammer and Sickle are 15 minutes away from two of the Two Guys locations. And Eric Hansen, the owner, would come in regularly after golf, after meetings, whatever. And we became pretty friendly. And one day he just handed me an offer letter and, it was a good day.
That's a good thing to have. And Dave, let you go.
Dave, let me go. Dave, some say he was happy about it, but I like to think he was sad.
Yeah. Understandable. So let's kind of get into a little bit. We'll kind of get into your role a little more in Hammer and Sickle in a minute, but for folks who may not know the history of Hammer and Sickle, Can you give us a little bit of the of an overview of that?
Yeah. So in 2007, I believe they launched the vodka. So that's originally what we are, the Hammer and Sickle vodka. That's a Russian-made product, 100% Russian winter wheat, six times filtered, six times distilled, spectacular product. And the brand was always meant to be a lifestyle brand. So around end of 2009, beginning of 2010, they launched the Hammer and Sickle Tradition line, which was the cigar that used to come in the crystal packaging but has since changed. And you know, after that, we just kept rolling with the cigars because Eric Hansen just, he loved to smoke. That was, you know, that's why he got into this. And you know, originally the brand was kind of started, the cigar side was started just as gifts for the big vodka customers, and it just worked. People love the cigar, so they ran with it, and here we are today.
The were you already working in retail when the Hammer and Sickle brand started, or was that that came a little later?
So Hammer and Sickle launched like 2 months after I started working for Dave.
Okay.
So we both got into the cigar industry right around the same time.
Okay, so that's interesting too. And you know, Hammer and Sickle, let me just comment on the vodka, because you were kind enough to send us this vodka. And we were talking before, I really enjoyed it. Like you said, it's a very smooth vodka. I'm not known as a big drinker, right? But for folks who, I do have a wife, that's the big joke. My wife doesn't even drink as much, right? And she I gave her a little of this and she liked it. So
it's really smooth. It really, yeah. I mean, the idea of vodka is to be the brand that tastes like nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you want it to be smooth, and if there is flavor, you want it to be good, you know, citrusy notes. So
yeah.
I love the product.
No, it's
the cigars are great too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I want to say it was around 2010. This is when Hammer and Sickle was starting to kind of gain some traction. There was a little controversy about the branding, right? Because it was Russian branding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? And how did maybe you were working in retail, how did you overcome that maybe to help customers, you know, bring them to these products?
I mean, it's kind of tough. Everyone's a different situation, but the biggest thing that I would bring up to get people over the logo is, first off, it doesn't have the star, which at that point, it's just the Hammer and Sickle, which right. represents the industrial North and agricultural South coming together to make a better product, which is what the vodka embodies. The winter wheat is grown in the North and or South, and it's distilled in the South. And so that's bringing the two parts together to make a better product.
Right.
And the other thing, the easy thing is pretty much everyone will smoke a Cuban cigar.
Right.
And that's, I mean, you have a problem with the logo because it was used as part of a communistic thing, but a Cuban cigar is directly supporting communism.
I always said the same thing, as sometimes you see a little flag on there and the colors. Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things. They're great cigars. I wish everybody would try them. You know, definitely change their mind. We still get it a little bit, but it's nothing crazy.
No, that's good to hear. So you started out with Hammer and Sickle. Were you working sales rep? Was that how you started out as?
So I kind of started out as a little bit of everything, because where I live was super close to the warehouse. So, and to this day, I still kind of do everything. I'll pack orders. I'll get orders in. I'll do invoicing. I like to keep my hands in everything. And when I started, it was mostly territory manager for New England.
Right.
So I did that for about a year and a half. And then got bumped up because we started to get a little bigger. So we started to get brokers. So I was bumped to national sales manager at that point. And I was watching over everything.
So fast forward to last year, there was some big changes that happened in the company. And obviously the face of your company, Eric Hansen, passed away suddenly. Very tough thing. Your role changes after that again, right? Where you now are pretty much you're running the operations of the cigar side, correct?
Yeah. So I'm executive vice president of Clint Tobacco. And you know, I'm enjoying the job a lot. I wish I got it under different circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I wish I was still working with Eric, obviously. You know, we had a lot of fun together and, you know, but things happen. And, yeah, so we're moving forward. We've changed a lot of our packaging. Pretty much all of our packaging has changed. It ships much easier now.
sure, the weight's a lot different.
The crystal and the marble were over 8 pounds for one. To ship a box to California, one box to California was over $30.
Yeah.
Wow.
The weight, it definitely hurt us a little bit in the shipping area. Mm. You know, not a lot of places were buying in bulk.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
But the brand did get a it did really, how can I put it? You guys became very synonymous with this packaging early on. There was yes. some of the most, from leather boxes to I have the marble box of the Berlin Wall sitting right across from me that I still have out. And, you know, so I understand the shipping kit, but it's a little bit, is it a little bit of a tough change now, you know, with the consumers who were used to some of that packaging? They weren't paying the shipping rates, but now they have to get used to different packaging.
Changing anything is difficult with consumers. You know, they get used to it and they love it. And so changing it definitely scares them. But they understand it. They like it. And I think we did a nice job with the packaging. You know, we just did it with a bright red, a brilliant white, you know, a nice solid black. Try to keep it simple and classy still. And, you know, at first we saw a little slowdown because of the packaging change for sure, but it's picked back up.
That's good.
You know, the retailers do a great job of making sure it still gets in their hand and, you know, making them understand that it's still the same cigar and everything's okay.
Yeah.
So, and I understand it too. When, you know, packaging changes on something, I'll skip right over it because I'm not looking for that.
Right.
So, you know, I understand where it comes from.
Are there plans? I know, for example, you had some of the limited edition, like the museum series, some of those beautiful ceramic types. Are there still maybe some limited edition projects you could still do with some of this packaging? And offer them as special things?
So from time to time, we might. Another problem that came into play why it really made it easy to switch packaging when we did was all the tariffs getting implemented in China. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fear of more getting added. So the packaging was already pretty expensive by itself. And right. then you added more tariffs to it. We're still going to think of cool and innovative ways to, you know, package the cigars and, hopefully, you know, keep up the legacy of Hammer and Sickle.
Sure.
With like you said, limited editions mostly.
Yeah.
It just makes it easier.
One thing that I think the brand's done exceptionally well right from the start is you've established some great partnerships with some of the factories. And that's been, I think, you know, one of your strengths. You know, talk about some of the factories you're working with right now.
We used to work with Davidoff. We are in the process of moving to a smaller factory in the Dominican that lets us get a little more hands-on and a little more creative with it. But for the most part, it really has just been Davidoff up until this point.
Okay.
You know, we found a good thing and stuck with it.
Yep.
And, you know, we did the Kalanok, the peat fire-cured tobacco. We did that with Phil Zangy. And pretty much outside of that, that's really been it. We had a lot of opportunities to go other places, but we just kind of stayed under one roof.
Right. No, that makes some sense too.
But I mean, I look forward to branching out a little bit and, you know, being able to diversify and, you know, have a little more, you know, spice.
Sure.
No,
I understand that as well. As long as we mentioned Kalanok, is that a project that's ongoing?
That's a project that as of now is ongoing.
Okay, that's good to hear.
We're still, you know, making sure that it's all working. And that's kind of one of those projects that we won't know if it's going to stop until, I mean, it's going to sound stupid. We're not going to know it's going to be done until we know it's going to be done. So the cigars are changing drastically as they age. Mm-hmm. So we have a ton of the tobacco already peat fired. So at this point, the tobacco could turn at any point. We don't know what's going to happen with that, you know? So it could have a much shorter shelf life because of the peat smoke. So.
Right. Right. Understand.
So it's all a learning curve with that one.
Yeah. For folks who may not be familiar with Kalianak, could you talk about that? Cause this wasn't your fire cured tobacco project that many people think are very used to right now. It was something very different.
Correct. So we got peat. I mean, if you guys are familiar with the process of making scotch, they bring in peat and basically pump the smoke in to kill the growth of the barley. And that's what imparts the super peaty flavor in single malt scotches. And we got that same peat from Scotland, shipped it to the Dominican, built a barn, and basically lit it on fire. Every once in a while, we'll go in and throw some water on it to get, you know, a good amount of smoke going. And that would impart the flavors of peat, so basically scotch, into the tobacco. And we had it in two strengths, the 25 and the 50, which those numbers represent the percentage of filler tobacco that's used in a cigar of the peat fire cured. So very unique cigar, first of its kind. And it was a challenging process.
Yeah, we had talked about it before. I think there was initially a plan to possibly do a 75, and I think we discussed it. And you said it just the cigars wouldn't burn at that level with that much of that peat fired tobacco in there, right?
You struggle from time to time getting it to burn in the 50.
Uh-huh.
The 75 was near impossible, and then we also had plans of doing a limited run of 100% peat fired.
Oh wow!
Which would have been wrapper, binder, filler, and we smoked one, and almost threw up. Mm-hmm. It was hurt. It was just it wasn't good. So we stopped it at 50 because you know the 75 just wouldn't light well. The 100 was smoking a stick.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, it was a really fun project to get to work on and try to figure it out, because it took a while to figure out the right mix of tobaccos to work well with it. You know, Maduro wrapper was too sweet. It just, you lost the peat in the 25. Mm. The 50 was so subdued. It had to be a wrapper that was able to be overpowered. So it was a lot of samples smoked for that.
Yeah, I remember smoking the 25, and I was like, I can taste a little bit of it, but I'm, you know, I like, you know, peated scotch, so I'm like, I want a little bit more. So I was looking forward to that 50. When I smoked the 50, I was like, all right, this is the good balance here.
Yeah, the 50 is perfect in my opinion, especially if you have a nice scotch going. I mean, it just adds to the experience.
Yeah.
There is something, I believe, what you're saying about this aging component, because I know this isn't a wood fire cured cigar that's being done with wood, but the wood fire cured cigars I have found have had significant changes with long-term aging. That's what I've seen. I mean, those cigars will change, and they perform actually pretty well with that.
Yep.
I have a few of the 50s still sitting around. I need to go back and smoke them. They've got to be at least 2 or 3 years old.
You are going to notice a lot more.
Yeah.
A lot more peat. Those things are, it smooths out nice, but the flavor is much more noticeable.
That's good.
You definitely get it.
That's good to hear.
So it's, you know, one of those games.
Yep.
See what happens and just ride with it as long as we can.
Yeah. I mean, so you can't do more with the strengths, but are there other blends maybe you can explore at some point with that?
It's really tough. You know, like I said, it's basically a Criollo blend with, I believe it's an Ecuadorian wrapper. And that was the perfect thing we could find. There was no, you know, a Corojo wrapper didn't go well.
Right.
Maduro wrapper just didn't mix. And it has to be a strong enough wrapper that can take the amount of heat for like the 50. Mm-hmm. You really have to get that thing roasted. So if you're using too delicate of a wrapper, you're going to have issues. So it seems like this was kind of it. We might be trying another one. You know, it's something we can move forward with FDA because it's an existing brand. And we did at one point have the, you know, 75. So we could just make the 75 the Habano version or whatever we want to call it. So that might be something one day.
That's good.
Right now, we're still trying to make sure the company's running smoothly as is.
Right, right. And, you know, it sounds like you've, you know, I know what obviously the change with Eric leaving, but it also sounds like you've gone through a lot of other things on your end. You know, production changes are coming, packaging changes are coming. So it has been a very busy year and a half or so for you.
Been very stressful, but right. It's been fun. I'm getting to learn a lot of new stuff. And, you know, like I said, I wish it was under better circumstances that I was doing all this, but, you know, I'm happy to do it in his honor.
Right. No, that's a good, I did get it. You know, you set up the interview with Eric with me on my old show a few years ago. And it was a wonderful interview. So I do remember that very well.
Yeah. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
He
had a good sense of humor. Yeah. He had a very good sense of humor as well with that. So let's kind of talk a little about, you know, we mentioned some of the lines right now you have, and the first one was the Tradition series. So talk a little about that type of cigar. That was the first Hammer and Sickle cigar. What's that one about?
So the Tradition was created to kind of go along with the vodka to be a mild, mellow, pleasurable experience, as all cigars are, I guess, you know. And so that is a Ecuadorian Connecticut with Dominican binder and filler with just a little bit of Lajero, just to give it a little spice, a little, you know, extra kick. And that's been one of our best sellers, obviously, since. Pretty much all of our lines, we have Robusto, Toro, and Churchill. The Tradición is the exclusion to that because we also have a Salomón and a 6.5x60. So that's the line that does the best with different sizes as well.
And like I said, it's gone through some packaging changes as well. So it's going to be in, that was the one, which kind of box did that originally come in? Well, that wasn't the leather box.
That was the crystal.
The crystal box. Yes.
That was the crystal box. Yep. And that's in a red wooden box. Now we've got everything wood.
Yep.
You know, also changing the packaging, with FDA, when we were doing it before with the crystal, the marble, all of that stuff, it was coming directly to us.
Right.
And then we were getting the cigars shipped to us and we were putting them together in New Hampshire.
Oh, wow.
So with FDA now, with any type of user fees, anything like that, if we did that, we'd have to pay a second set of user fees.
Yeah.
Just the way it was explained. So part of this box change was keeping the costs lower.
Right.
So, cause you know, you don't want to double dip on those fees.
No, I understand it as well.
But yeah.
You mentioned that was an Ecuadorian Connecticut cigar. And then there was another Connecticut cigar that you came out with. Originally it was called the Icon. It was renamed to Trademark, but that one's a different Connecticut cigar.
Yeah, so that's actually a U.S. Connecticut wrapper with a Dominican binder and filler. And that cigar is just meant to be your everyday mild cigar. You get lots of flavor because we use the U.S. Connecticut. The binder and filler just make it very mild, very enjoyable, good for any time. Anybody can smoke it, and it's not gonna hurt anybody. And then with that line, what I believe you're actually smoking is the Maduro version, which is a San Andreas wrapper over the same binder and filler. So you get all the flavors of a San Andreas without any competing, you know, from Lajero or, you know, anything like that.
Yeah, that's the one thing that's really, and I'll talk a little about that cigar. That's exactly what I'm getting from this particular cigar. We'll talk about what we're smoking, at the end. But, yeah, I would agree with you on that. It's a very, very smooth Maduro.
Yep. It's mild. It's but a ton of flavor.
Yeah.
And you know, we wanted to try and do something a little different. I know other companies have done that before, but make a Maduro that people don't have to be afraid of.
Right.
Because everybody sees dark and they think it's going to be strong.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as we all know, isn't always the case. But yeah, we wanted to do that. And I love that cigar. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. You know, and the original Connecticut, the U.S. Connecticut shade version of that, again, it's a very, you know, the U.S. Connecticut, I find, can be bitter at times and tannic, but not in that case at all.
Yeah, no, we don't want to try and pretend to be something we're not. So sometimes I'll say, yeah, we blended that very well to make sure that didn't happen. But we didn't really blend it. You know, the professionals did. The guys who have blending in their blood and, it, you know, it's passed down. And, you know, we just kind of tell them what we want and they make what we want. And, you know, they knock it out of the park for us.
Right, right. And, yeah. So. And it had to be one of the most unique name changes I ever saw in the cigar industry. Obviously, there was a dispute with Icon. So you really did the trademark, which was like, that was brilliant.
Yeah, you can't trademark the name trademark. So,
right.
Just tried to have a little fun with it. You know, I mean, it was, we were in the right. We would have been able to keep the name, but it would have just cost us a fortune. And, you know, we got to have a little fun with it and have a story about it. So,
yep.
And I like the name trademark.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was a really, really cool name, actually.
Yeah.
Well,
Yeah. And then after those, we have our Hermitage line,
right,
which is one that's pretty unique as well, because that has 8% German tobacco as the filler, in the filler.
Okay.
So that kind of gives it a little saltiness. It just, you know, it's a different smoking experience than we're really used to, because you don't get a lot of German tobacco in cigars. That's primarily used for pipe tobacco and cigarettes and just something different we wanted to try, and it worked out. And so I love that cigar. That one is my favorite.
What other tobaccos went into that blend besides the German tobacco?
So we have it's an Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, a Honduran binder, and a Nicaraguan, Honduran, and German filler.
Okay.
And it's a little bit of Ligero from each of those regions outside of well, I guess the Germany tobacco would be considered Ligero. So it's a blend of Ligeros.
And it's a box press line, correct?
Correct.
Yep.
Yep. For some reason, I prefer box press now. It's really grown on me. When I first started smoking, I wasn't really into it. It didn't seem natural. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now it's grown on me. It doesn't roll off my golf cart or my desk. Right. You know,
They're easy to photograph in the light box.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's just an easier cigar to work with.
Yeah, no, and we'll talk about this cigar because I'm looking forward to smoking the Berlin Wall in the box press as well.
Yeah, so the Berlin Wall, we've changed that one. So the Berlin Wall round, the original one with the copper band, is going to be going away.
Oh, man.
Oh, that was a good cigar.
It was a great cigar. We kind of did a little test with the Berlin Wall box press. We came out with it to see. We wanted to try to do something in a 10-count box, and we wanted to see if we could do a line extension on something to, you know, see how it would work. And so that's what we picked. And when we came out with it, the sales of the Berlin Wall just slowed down, just stopped. Everybody was buying the 10-count, and it continued that way. So we're just moving forward with this one. In my opinion, it's a better cigar, and it's nuts because it's the same blend, just box pressed.
That was a Honduran made cigar, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Correct. Honduran Puro.
Okay.
And yeah, it was great cigar, but the box press version blows it out of the water. And it's just amazing to me how that changes it so much. It makes sense that it would change it a little bit, but for it to be a completely different smoking experience is crazy.
I have seen that with some blends where the box press will change it significantly.
Yep.
I've seen it happen. In other cases, I haven't, but I have seen it happen with that.
Yeah. It's fun. Keeps you on your toes.
Yeah. So the copper bands are gone too?
Copper bands are gone too, yeah.
Were there any problems with that, or was it just, again, kind of a decision?
There was a lot of problems with that. Factories didn't want to put them on. It was a lot more labor intensive.
Right.
They were actually fairly cheap. You know, I mean, it was obviously more expensive than your normal band, but it wasn't astronomical. It was maybe double the price. But it just, we just ran into a lot of issues where they were too tight and it would crack the cigar.
Sure.
And also when we went to the box press, it was nearly impossible to get it on there.
Yeah. I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a bummer. I didn't want to get rid of the copper band. I loved that.
Yeah. No, they were so unique. Those copper bands. Yeah. I do remember when you brought the box presses to one of the trade shows. They were unbanded originally, if I'm not mistaken, though, right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah. So that was 2 or 3 years ago now?
Yeah.
They were unbanded when we first got them. That was just a whole confusing situation.
Right.
But, you know, now it's something. If you have those are the first run.
Yeah, wow, look at that.
I think I still have one or two kicking around the humidor.
I know I have some of the originals, but this is, like I said, I haven't smoked the box. I may have one, I don't know, but I don't think I have one because I haven't smoked the box press before.
It's really good. You're gonna enjoy it. Awesome. It really is good.
And they're still in the 10 count boxes then?
Still in the 10 count box. It's like a little zipper, almost neoprene material. Comes with it, in it is a like a little netting on the top part, so you can put your cutter, lighter, and a Obeda pack or whatever portable humidification you want to use. So it's basically a travel humidor, which is what we were trying to go for.
Which of these lines right now, which has been your best seller? Which is the best seller right now?
Best seller is the Trademark Connecticut.
It's okay.
That thing just flies.
I could say it.
It's such a good cigar too, so it makes sense. But they all, at this point, they all move really well. So yeah. We had the Moscow City a few years ago, which we discontinued.
I was going to ask you about that.
That cigar was, we weren't really a brand, in my opinion, built to do necessarily full-bodied cigars. You know, in the packaging and the crystal packaging and stuff like that, that to me is going to be a milder cigar. Just lends itself to that. And the Moscow City was a great cigar, just nobody took to it.
I liked it. Yeah, I did like it though. And it was one of the museum series pieces too, right?
Correct. That was the first museum series, which hopefully we'll be coming out with another. I just got to get some stuff figured out on that.
Right.
But, exactly. I loved that cigar, but it just didn't. We're a mild company, mild to medium company. That's what sells for us.
Yeah, and I think that's in your, I guess you could say that's in your sweet spot too, as well.
So I guess it's part of, you know, knowing where you fit in and, you know, trying to stick with that and do the best you can at your strong suits.
Yep.
So. It doesn't hurt that's the bulk of the cigar buying public is the milder stuff anyway. You know, as much as
100%, yeah,
as much as people that like are on social media like thinking, you know, full body is what it is, it's, you know, for non-infused, the lighter body, lighter strength stuff is where the bulk of the buying happens.
Oh, 100%. It's got to be around 10% of the industry is full bodied. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy.
Yeah.
Okay with it being mild to medium.
But then I've gotten some of these full strength cigars, and we've talked about them, and they're strength, and there's nothing to them. Like,
right.
Yeah. There's no flavor whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like bourbon, I guess, when you get to the bourbons that are 107, 110 proof, you know, that's what you get. It's just the strength.
Yeah.
So it's hard to find other things when it's that strong.
You had a cigar that was, it was one of my all-time favorites that you guys had, the Sochi.
Yes.
I got to ask the question. Did Dave Garofalo really buy that whole allotment from you guys, or was that planned for him all along?
No, it was not planned for him all along. we walked in. We said, we're planning on doing this. It's going to be a super limited run because we had decided to do it like 2 or 3 months before the Olympics were happening. So we're like, it's got to be a super limited. So we're like, it's going to be no more than 200 boxes. And I think we only made 100 boxes of it. We walked in and we were telling Dave about it and asking him how many he'd want. And he goes, yeah. He's like, I'd love it. It'd be great. And he's just like, we'll take it all. And so we walked out and we're like, oh, okay, now we got to go through with this and actually get this done in time for the Olympics. So
I got two of those boxes. I did get two of them. So I was like, oh, that was the one with the seven tobaccos in it.
The seven tobacco blend. Yeah. That cigar changed so much while you were smoking it. It told the story, man. It was awesome.
Yeah. So I did enjoy that. And then you had the LE14, which came out after that.
Yep. The LE14, which was a six tobacco blend.
Yep.
We decided to take one away for whatever reason.
Yep. And one of the Sochis went to President Putin, right? If I'm not mistaken.
He had me send one to the Kremlin.
We don't know if he ever smoked it, huh?
No idea. Definitely didn't get a picture of him smoking it.
So you were tasked with, okay, I got to send this to the Kremlin. You had to figure out how to send this to the Kremlin, like basically, right?
Yeah, I basically just wrote on a box Kremlin and put it in the mail.
It's like letters to Santa. They're just going to show up there.
Exactly. But it's not coming back.
Mr. Putin, Kremlin.
Yeah. I'm sure that box got checked a lot of times.
That's what I was wondering. Oh, geez, that's good. That's good. But yeah, I remember that was 2014 for the Olympics. I actually was watching the show when he bought it. I'm like, all right, maybe I didn't know if it was true or not. And then I went and I just was very intrigued and I ended up getting two boxes and I was glad I did. So,
and I smoked such a good cigar.
It was.
Such a good. I have maybe four of the cigars left.
Wow.
And those are my babies now.
Yeah. They were good. It was just, it was one of those cigars too with the seven tobaccos. The tobacco melded so well together.
It really did.
Yeah, it really did. And, it didn't like, some of the ones I have with a lot of tobaccos, they'll overmeld, but those never did. So I know it took me like a year. I went through them after a year. I just couldn't leave them. So they were, and normally I'm known to save cigars, but those were good.
That's what we like to hear. We want you smoking them.
Yeah. I tend to get the cigars. I tend to be the procrastinator.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in there,
I smoke what I get now. If I like it, I'm going to smoke it. So maybe save one for a special occasion, but besides that, I'm going to burn through them quick.
Yeah, exactly. Aaron, you had some questions on the Unidas series.
Yes, yeah, so, just this year, the series Unidas with United Cigar came out. That's kind of a collaboration series that they seem to be doing. You guys were the first ones to work with them on that.
Correct. That launched probably 4 or 5 months ago. And that was a project that Eric had started working on with them before his passing, and the cigar was completed. They just didn't have the packaging. So myself and Oliver Navode worked on that and got it done. It's a little unique. It has a zip tie.
Yes.
Basically keeping the cigar sealed, which is kind of a nod to my other passion, which is shoes,
right?
Sneakers. that is a, the way we ended up doing that was it's like a tradition blend. We gave them our blend for that and let them tweak it a little bit. So it truly is kind of like a cross blend. It's not, just coming up with a cigar. We gave them what we wanted them to do. And it's, they use a little bit darker of a wrapper and tweak the blend. And it's a spectacular cigar. It's, I believe, 6¾ by 46.
Nice size. That's a nice size.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great size. I've been smoking those like crazy.
Is that a one and done, or is it an ongoing thing that you're going to have?
That's a one and done thing for us, I believe. I believe for United Cigars, the series Unidas is going to be a continual thing with other brands.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to be like their collab aspect.
Right. So it's their collaboration platform, and you guys participated in that.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yep. And, it's been selling great. Super happy with it. And Plus, I got to work with Oliver Nevode a little bit. Don't know if you guys know him.
We know Oliver. Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Fun guy.
Great guy. Great guy.
He eats too many tacos, though.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you guys were just you know, hammering this out over tacos all the time. So.
No, I got a sensitive stomach. I can't eat like him. I can't handle that.
Oh, geez. Are there types of things that maybe Hammer and Sickle would look at doing more types of projects like that? Now that you said you're working with some smaller factories,
absolutely,
that give you the room to do that?
That's kind of what drew me into the cigar industry. Is it's such a small industry that people work together so well. You know, there's not a lot of other industries where you see two of the top players, you know, working together to make cigars. And, you know, I just like that I can team up with someone who might have a little more experience than I do, and I can learn from it. And, you know, we can make a product that everybody will love.
Absolutely.
So that's definitely something I'm looking forward to doing more of, for sure.
One of our listeners is Bo from 724 Cigars. He mentioned a project called the Eric Hansen cigar. What's that one
Correct.
About?
So we made a cigar called EPH, which were his initials, and that was a limited of 250 boxes, and we sold it just to the three stores in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where our cigars are. That's where, you know, we went to all the time, so we kept it local. So two guys had it, Twin Smoke Shop had it, and Plastow Cigars had it, and I believe they still have some available because it just launched maybe a month and a half ago or so. Mm-hmm. And Bo got to smoke one of the first ones with me when I went and I personally dropped him off at Twins. And, you know, Bo was there, so we had one together. And I like Bo. What's going on, Bo? Hope you're having a good night.
Bo's the guy who's instrumental in my New Hampshire trip. So he's like, you got to get up there next year. So I'm starting to plan my travel for next year, like budget and stuff. So I'm like, I got to work this one out. I told him.
Absolutely. Is there something specific you're trying to go up to New Hampshire for?
I'm just going to go up and visit. There's some great shops up there. So, absolutely. I mean, I have not been to Dave's shop yet. So I do want to get there.
Yeah. The shops in New Hampshire it's amazing.
Yeah.
They're some of the best shops around for sure.
The last time I was to a shop in New Hampshire was Kurt's old store, the old twin shop. Yep. This was 2010. So it's
the
been
new
a long,
one is a
yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah. And I was it on a is. Business trip in Boston, so I just managed to scoot out like one afternoon up there is what I was able to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, you definitely got to come up.
Yeah. So
that'll be fun.
That'll be awesome there.
You drinking straight vodka there?
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Definitely.
Are you to that.
Yeah. Like I said, this is, thank you for sending this. This is really good. Are you involved with the vodka piece at all? Or are you strictly with the cigars?
So we're all kind of involved, you know, our main office in Lowell that houses the, basically the directors of both companies is on the cigar side, really just myself. And then Anthony Fletcher, who is, kind of overseeing everything.
Right.
The, president and CEO, I believe, of Kling Group under Rick Hansen, who was Eric's father.
Right.
Who was basically kind of showing us all the way.
Yep.
And then on the vodka side, there's, James O'Neill, who's the vice president. And then, John Considine, who is vice president of sales, and that's it. So in that office, we all work very well together. If there's a problem, we try to hash it out. You know, I call the vodka guys in on problems on the cigar side all the time. And they call me in for questions on the vodka just to get a different perspective.
And so this is a very small operation. This is not like a big operation, but it's small, you know, boutique type operation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the vodka side doesn't need to be huge because our distillery is in Russia.
Right.
We have distribution companies throughout the United States that do all of that for us. But yeah, no, the cigar side is very small.
Yep.
Cigar side, we keep it tight.
Right. You sent us one of the vodkas. Are there other vodkas that the company makes?
That's it. We just stick to that.
Wow. It's a good product.
One simple vodka.
I got to
say, made some other stuff, but again, it kind of goes back to stick to what you know and, you know, what's working.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So.
But yeah, Aaron, glad you guys got it and it didn't break in transit.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I was more worried I'd knock it off the table tonight. I had to put it on the side, which would have happened. Trust me. It was, but it's good. Aaron, do you have any other questions or we want to get into what we're smoking here?
I have one more question.
Yep.
I want to say it was the year that the box press Berlin Wall was kind of introduced. You had these interesting backpacks at the booth.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What were those backpacks about?
I have no idea, but they were like $500 a piece. And they were just plastic.
Yeah.
Like they weren't. We were going to engrave them because we have the engraver in-house.
Right.
And I called the company to see what they were made of. I'm like, oh, I want to engrave it. And he goes, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And I'm like, why? He goes, just don't do it. And I'm like, all right. And so I tried to do one and it just burned a hole right through it.
Right.
Yeah. So I wasted a $500 backpack. But yeah, those were, you know, kind of like turtle shells. They were, yeah. It was weird.
Right.
Not 100% sure why we did that, to be honest. Yeah.
There's an interesting shape and the whole design was pretty interesting. It just seemed, you know, something kind of cool.
And people loved them. They were uncomfortable though.
Yeah.
It was just flat plastic on your back. It wasn't, there's no padding. But just one of those things we do to have fun,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Nice. I got one more question. You mentioned the trade show. You guys haven't been at the trade show the last couple of years. Are there plans to return to the trade show at some point?
To be honest, it really hasn't hurt us not going. Trade show is very expensive. So the first year when Hansen passed away, when we decided not to go, because it was like 3 weeks after, I was horrified. I didn't know how we were going to do it. You know, we do a decent amount of business at the trade show. And we still got the calls. I still got texts. You know, we did all right. You know, we had our second biggest year at the trade show, not being at the trade show. Hmm. And this year, we had our best year of the trade show, not being at the trade show. So a lot of consumers aren't going anymore. So it doesn't... we didn't have anything new to show. Maybe if we have something new to show,
right,
we'd go back. But when we're just showing the same old stuff, I don't necessarily see a point. I mean, other than me getting to hang out with you guys and stuff, that's
right.
Yeah, I missed that part because obviously that was really the only time I get to see you guys. And you guys had a great. You always had a great booth as well.
Yeah, yeah, we always had fun with that. But just right now it seems to make sense. Especially with me being really the only person on the cigar side, it'd be very tough to do that.
Right. Exactly.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm never going to say it definitely not going to happen again, but.
But business is working for you right now. I mean, considering all the changes you've had and it's, if you have a good years, stick with what works.
Absolutely. And I mean, the trade show can get upwards of, $80,000 to $100,000 real quick.
Yeah.
So you have to spend a lot of money to make that money. So it's one of those things where we'll see.
Very good. So why don't we just get into what we are smoking here to wrap up the segment with Eric. And that segment, as always, is sponsored by Tailored Smoke. Located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter, Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for tailored smoking experience. Aaron, what are you smoking tonight?
I am smoking the Trademark Connecticut. There you go.
Getting down there.
Yeah. Coop, I'm a Connecticut fan.
Right.
So this is a very nice cigar. Very smooth, very creamy. You don't get some of those traditional Connecticut grassy or bitterness flavors from it. It's just really smooth. Retrohale smooth. You can just really pick out the flavors and then kind of enjoy the experience. It's not overpowering at all. Nice woody components, creamy components. So if you're a fan of Connecticut Shade cigars, this is a cigar to definitely check out. If it hasn't been on your radar or whatever, it's one of those ones that I think, you could smoke it any time of day. If you're a fan of pairing it with coffee in the morning and things like that, I'm sure this would go great with that. And it's, very light on the strength, but it's just, it's an enjoyable cigar, and it's got a lot of flavor to it. So, you know, sometimes some of them can be kind of thin and things like that, but this is not like that. It's a, you know, great construction, great flavors, low strength. So it's just a really enjoyable cigar.
So you'd rate that like 104?
If I rated that on that scale, possibly. Yeah. Barry might bump it up a couple more points, but yeah, I'd go 104.
There you go. And I'm smoking the counterpart here, the trademark Maduro, which this is a Maduro you could smoke any time of the day. If you want to have it with a black cup of coffee in the morning, it would be great. It's a great after dinner cigar as well. It's not gonna be, if you don't like a cigar with a lot of like strength, this is a cigar for you. But it's got a lot of flavor to it. And what I like about this cigar is it doesn't have sometimes that pungency you get from the San Andreas wrapper. It's a much smoother cigar. And it's very well balanced. So, I mean, you get just the right components of it's hitting all parts of your tongue, like perfectly with that, a little sweetness, a little spice, excellent construction. And, I'll rate this 108 again with the caveat that Barry's going to bump it up a couple more points.
I love it.
Yeah.
We love you, Barry. We're
just, he'll say he's from New York, so he could take it. We're both from New York. Right?
Absolutely. All right. But glad you guys enjoy the cigars.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, man, I would say your brand is probably an you know, kind of under the radar brand for a lot of people. Yeah. I enjoy all the cigars. I mean,
really do, yeah.
I went to a shop in Sacramento and I saw them in the humidor and I said, you know, I'm going to get, it was the Berlin Wall in the marble box. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to give this a shot. I want to try this cigar. And I smoked it. I was like, this is a really good cigar. And it was, you know, I think other than hearing it talked about on the Cigar Authority, I hadn't seen it around much. So when I spotted it, I wanted to try it. But and then after I smoked that one, I wanted to try a bunch of the other ones. And I was like, these are all really good cigars. It's just, it's a brand that,
you
know, probably doesn't have as much publicity as some other brands, but all the cigars are very good. And if people haven't tried the brand, I would highly suggest that they do so, because I think, you know, if, you know, maybe they don't like the, you know, the Connecticut Shade or whatever, but there's some other lines that, you know, are kind of medium body and things like that. And they're also very good. So they'll find something they like in the portfolio. I would say that.
Yeah. There's something for everybody for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you. I mean, that's, you know, obviously what you always want to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll second that as well. This is definitely an under the radar brand. We have had them in North Carolina. They've done very well in North Carolina. I know the Berlin Walls, the trademarks have done very well. And like I said, they're consistent, Eric. If you guys are undergoing a lot of changes, like you said, and you're changing factories, the cigars are still smoking great. So I think that's a really good sign there. And like I said, they're quality smokes. I feel like, you know, I don't feel like I'm disappointed, you know, after smoking any of the Hammer and Sickle ones. So
that's what we strive. We want the cigar experience to be as close to the same every time. Right. We were talking about this earlier, where there's a lot of variables that can change between cigar and cigar.
Yeah.
So the things you can control, you know, the smoking quality, the burn, all of that stuff. We're pretty anal about making sure that that's top notch, because what you can control, you want to be able to control.
No, that's good. That's good. And like I said, you're doing a fantastic job. Like I said, under some very difficult circumstances, it sounds like.
Appreciate that.
So, you know, keep up the great work there is what I'll say.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Yep. All right. Anything else, Aaron?
No, I think we're good.
All right, Eric, I know it's late. We want to thank you very much for being a part of the show tonight. Don't be a stranger. We'll have you back for sure.
Sounds great. Thank you guys very much. This was a blast.
Right, awesome. We appreciate it and appreciate the support. Thanks for sending the cigars and the vodka as well. Folks need to check out Hammer and Sickle Cigars and Hammer and Sickle Vodka. I'd advise both of those things.
Yeah.
We'd love it.
All right. You have a great night, Eric. Take care.
All right. You too, guys.
Okay. Bye-bye. That was Eric Hansen of Hammer and Sickle.
Eric Wentworth. Don't.
Did I say, oh, my goodness. I'm sorry, Eric. But I'm glad he went. I said, I always blow it. Eric Wentworth of Hammer and Sickle Cigars. You know, he like I said, when you have a guy like that, you know, unfortunately passed away, he was so synonymous with that brand for a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
yeah, the same first names. It's easy.
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah, mix them up. But I always blow it too. So hopefully you'll come back on now. But anyway, let's take a word from our sponsors and get into our next segment. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, it was a leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Jamestown Valley of Honduras, Julio Araroa took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds. In 2000, he reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the Jerry Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now with Jerry Tobacco, Julio and his son Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing the authentic Corojo leaf. Tatascan offers a mild to medium cigar in both Connecticut and Habano wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is available in a 100% authentic Corojo Puro, San Andreas Maduro, or Ecuadorian Connecticut, representing the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer, be sure to ask for Jerry Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every drawer. M.By Plasencia Cigars. Plasencia Cigars is one of the world's leading growers of first-class tobacco, as they have been pioneers in the industry since 1865. Five generations of the Plasencia family have continued the legacy in Nicaragua and Honduras. Today, the Plasencia family's very own cigar line, led by CEO and master blender Nestor Andres Plasencia, produces over 40 million handmade cigars each year. Plasencia Cigars celebrates their Nicaraguan roots through their premium Alma series, inclusive of the complex blends of the Alma Fuerte, Alma del Campo, and the newest release, the Alma del Fuego, each harvested in the pure soils of Nicaragua. And by Cornelius and Anthony, if you're going to be wanted for something great. That's what Cornelius Bailey set out to do five generations ago, and that's what Stephen Bailey is doing with Cornelius and Anthony Cigars. Using the finest tobaccos, Cornelius and Anthony brings to you Daddy Mac, Venganza, Meridian, Cornelius, Ariel, Senior E-Sugars, and the Gent and Mistress. You can find them at your local tobacconist. And by J.C. Newman Cigar Company. Founded in 1895 by Julius Caesar Newman, the J.C. Newman Cigar Company is the oldest family-owned premium cigar maker in America. For four generations and 124 years, J.C. Newman has been handcrafting many of the world's finest cigars. J.C. Newman is headquartered in an iconic 109-year-old cigar factory in the Ybor City National Historic Landmark District in Tampa, Florida. At this factory known as Elver Hole, J.C. Newman rolls premium cigars by hand and hand-operated antique cigar machines. The J.C. Newman Pensa Cigar Factory is the second largest in Nicaragua, and it's where Brick House, Perla de Mar, El Baton, and Quorum cigars are hand-rolled. J.C. Newman's Diamond Crown, Maximus, Julius Caesar, and Black Diamond cigars are handmade by Tabacalera A. Fuente in the Dominican Republic. With longtime partners, the Arturo Fuente family, the Newmans founded the Cigar Family Charitable Foundation, which supports low-income families in the Dominican Republic with education, healthcare, vocational training, and clean water. Visit jcnewman.com to learn more. And by Alec Bradley Cigars. Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley. Visit alecbradley.com to find out more about their cigars, Live True. And we're going to get into the Live True segment sponsored by Alec Bradley Cigars. Aaron, just a note on Alec Bradley. So next week, folks, Lars Teton is confirmed for the show.
There you go.
Well, I did speak to Jonathan Lipson this morning. Actually, we messaged. I have to have a conversation, he said, with Jonathan, though. He said, we should have a conversation because he said, this is going to be a different type of show.
Really?
But, yeah.
Won't be standard format.
It will. No, I think it'll be standard format. I think maybe a different type of guest. So.
No, I understand.
Yeah, so I'll be talking to Jonathan tomorrow.
See if we can get a musical segment.
That is one of my questions, absolutely, because I'm hoping we can do that for the Live True segment.
Are we perfect?
So I think I mean, to get a live performance, like the only thing I got to wonder is will someone nail me for copyright with Lars Teton's copyright actually nail me somehow on YouTube?
I mean, if he owns it and he says it's okay, I'm sure you're going to be good.
Yeah, so we'll try. Rest assured on that. So you're going to want to tune into that show next Thursday for sure, and see how that goes. Anyway, I came up with the Live True segment, theme parks, right? Now, what, I think it's a goofy category in a way, but I wanted this a few weeks ago because did you see there was like a picture of like Jose Blanco at Legoland?
Yeah, very, very interested in what was going on.
So that picture came up and it let me put it like this. It kind of hit home is what I'll just say. Uh-huh. He looked like he couldn't wait to get to go. I mean, I'm not saying he didn't want to be with his kid or anything, but he looked like he couldn't wait to go have a cigar.
Right.
I would have paid money to see Jose Blanco at Legoland. Oh, my goodness. But it kind of got me thinking of theme parks and all these things here. I'll kind of just set the table. I'm not a big theme park guy. Are you a theme park guy?
Not a lot, but the Disneyland I do enjoy.
You do enjoy it. So I didn't go to Disneyland until I was like 14. I went to the one in California originally.
Right.
So I'll never forget. I was not having a great time, right? And what do you call it? There was a guy. So I'm online, right? And there's a guy in front of me online. I'm looking at this guy, right? And he's got like curly hair, right? Dark curly hair. And I'm with my mom. And my mom goes, "That's the guy from the Brady Bunch."
Mm.
Like, no, that's not the. And I go, "Mom, that's not the guy from the Brady Bunch. It's the guy from, Slapshot, Killer Carlson." Okay. I figured it out, and I was a huge.
Right.
So it turned out it was the same guy.
Right.
He was like a husband that came across on the Brady Bunch later. I got married. It wasn't Greg Brady, right? And he was Killer Carlson, right? Mm-hmm. And he was really nice. I remember that, and that was like the highlight. And then about 14 years later, I'm in downtown Philadelphia. I'm in the lobby of a hotel, and I run into this guy again. And I obviously didn't remember. He says, "I probably right. was me." Yeah, I said, "Yeah." Yeah. I said, "We were online, and we thought my mom and I were arguing where you were from." So
yeah,
that's so cool. Yeah, so, so he's the guy who says, "Coach, I want that $100." That's like,
right.
But yeah, so. The interesting, I mean, so you were you a Disney person as a kid? I mean, people really get into the whole Disney aspects of things.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder. I just never got into it.
Yeah, I wasn't huge Disney. I mean, I went probably when I was five.
Right.
And then I didn't go again until I was an adult. After that, and I was dating a girl from Southern California. We went down there a lot. She was really into it, so I probably went like another like. 7 times over a span of like 3 or 4 years. So I got to spend a fair amount of time there, I guess.
Yeah, we always like I said, I never really went much to Disney Disney. And when my daughter was born, she was the girl, like I have a girl and 3 boys. And when she was little, I would drag her to like baseball games,
right?
Sporting events, right?
Yeah.
So she never had that motor, like she never had that like Disney princess moment. Unfortunately, we just never got to Florida with that. And then 3 boys come along,
right?
And they all want to go to Universal Studios. Like sure. They're not into Disney at all. They want to go to Universal Studios. So Universal Studios became the place where, like, if we went to Florida, we would go there quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I enjoyed, as a kid, I enjoyed Universal Studios more. I think more for boys.
I went to the one in California and Florida. Yeah, but it was a little more, like we went, my wife and I, we were married when we went. And it was entertaining.
Yeah.
But what turned me off about the amusement parks were lines. I just didn't like waiting. I'm not a person who likes waiting on. So
yeah, I'm not a big ride guy, so to stand in line for a long time for a ride, this is not my thing, you know.
You mean so like Jose Blanco like closing his eyes and falling asleep on the roller coaster?
Right. Yeah.
No, that was like let me put it like this. Yeah, I wasn't a big ride guy. We used to have an amusement park in the Northeast called Hershey Park. Hmm. And they had a ride which was kind of like it was called My Ride because it was called the Super Duper Looper. And it was a loop roller coaster, right?
Right.
I went on that thing once. And that was the last time I ever would go upside down on any ride again.
Yeah.
I was like, I must have been about 10, and I was not, I was scared shitless, and I was scarred for life after that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I did enjoy, I do enjoy some of the, like, some of the stuff which is a little more like virtual reality, I'll say. Right. I do like, for example, that you know, I there's certain theme parks I can go to where they have the virtual reality. You go into a theater and it kind of gives you a simulator, or it's like a space simulator or a flight simulator. Mm-hmm. That I can deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, I did go to one. I did go to Knott's Berry Farm also when I was in California years ago. I don't even know if that's still around.
I think I would assume it is, but I can't confirm. But I went there as a kid as well. It was more of a kind of a Western style, I think, when I was younger. So I remember like having like these cowboy like shows and stuff like that, where they're like, you know, they were falling out of the top of barns and into the hay bales and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Did when you went to any of these have you gone to any of these like carnival type rides at all? Like the ones that are at like fairs and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean I go to the state fair in California in Sacramento every couple years, and then like the county fair that's local to me. Now that my daughter's kind of age to be able to enjoy some of those things. But for me at the fairs, I'm more into the food than anything
else. That's what I was going to go with. Yeah.
You know, so I enjoy just eating all kinds of random garbage. So it's a good time for me.
Those funnel cakes are like nasty though. They're like, they'll, if you have a sensitive stomach, they're going to lay in there with all that oil. Yeah. The same with the corn dogs. They're all in oil.
I like the deep fried veggies. Yeah. All that stuff, the big turkey legs.
Oh, the turkey legs at Disney are awesome.
Yeah. And then, that's pretty good. And then ice cream and all that stuff, ice cream sundaes, banana splits, whatever.
Yep.
That's all fun.
Yeah. Oh, I knew it was a Tom Menti Six Flags. Yeah, I was going to mention Six Flags as well.
Yeah, there's one that's local to me. It was actually it's Six Flags now, but it used to be called Marine World, and it was more of a marine focused thing. So it was like killer whale shows and dolphin shows and like ski competitions and all that kind of stuff. And then they have some other wild animals now, like lions and tigers and stuff like that.
So, yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Did they have another one called Great America? I think I
yes.
went.
Yes.
Is that still around?
Great America. It is still around. Yeah.
Is it a Six Flags or no?
I think it might be a Six. Yeah, yeah. I think it is a Six Flags.
Yeah, we had Great Adventure in New Jersey, and it was kind of like situated between New York and Pennsylvania.
Right.
As well.
Yeah. And in 3 weeks, I'll be taking my daughter to Disneyland for the first time.
Oh, wow.
That'll be a fun trip. And, she's not like she doesn't watch like movies or anything like that, so she's never seen like any of the Disney movies or anything like that. But she's kind of like fringe into the princess thing, just like from the kids at school, kind of get her into it. So they have this thing; it's like a boutique at Disneyland where you can like they can get like pick out their dress and all that stuff and be made up as a princess.
Yeah, I did miss that part out with my daughter.
Yeah, so we're gonna do that with my daughter and see how that goes. But yeah. I think it should be a fun time. Do some of the more of the kiddie rides like Small World and all that kind of stuff. I think
it's a Small World where I met and the guy's name was Jerry Hauser, by the way. I just looked him up. That was the actor I was talking. We were online for It's a Small World.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I was like 12 or 13 even then, and it wasn't but that was a ride he was on, and I don't know if he was with his kid or nephew or something like that when I remember when we were there.
Yeah, the one I'll be interested in is doing the Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's a pretty good one.
I'm sure my daughter will be a little freaked out, but I think she'll get a kick out of being in the boat and all that stuff too. So it'll be interesting.
You know, I was disappointed when I went to Disney World. So I get there, right? And I'm expected to be greeted by Mickey Mouse.
Right.
Right? No, I'm greeted by two chipmunks. And I'm like, what do you mean? Well, where's Mickey? Mickey's apparently at that time was like a premium. Like to go meet Mickey, it was like premium. You had to go, no, you pay for that, right? You get the Chip and Dale. I don't know what they were, whatever they were. These two chipmunks. I'm like, well, really, this is the best you could do?
Yeah.
So
you get the lower end characters. Yeah.
So the other thing that happened to me is we used to have our – Disney has a lot of properties in Florida. And I was – we'd have our annual conference over at one of the properties, right? And you could still smoke on the properties at the time, right? You couldn't smoke in the hotels or the convention center. But so there was like an outside area. We'd all have cigars. And we're out there one morning having cigars. And Goofy comes walking by, right? And – hey, Goofy, like we wave to Goofy, and Goofy just like gives us like the like does this.
Right.
No. And he's like pointing our cigar like you.
Yeah.
He's like yelling at us. So that was always interesting to say the least too, you know, going into these the thing about the lines though, so my boys when they got a little older into their like when they were 12-ish, right? They would basically sit. They wanted to go. They didn't want to wait online,
right?
So they wanted the fast passes, right? So we didn't really try to spoil our kids, right? My wife's like, "No, they got to wait online." I'm like, "No, they don't have to wait online, right?" I'm like, "I said I got to wait online then." So we came up with this compromise where they'd have to fund part of the fast pass, right? Yeah. And it does make a difference at mm-hmm. some of these parks is what I'll say. But yeah, some of these things were like 2 hours. And I remember as a kid waiting online for 2 hours and what happens, the ride breaks and gets
shut,
you're out, right?
Exactly.
I do understand it too. And there's no like refunds when that happens.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. How about water parks? You ever get into a water park?
As a teenager, I think I did, but not so much now.
Yeah. Someone mentioned Sosa Cigars in Downtown Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting place to go to is what I'll say.
Right.
The best way, what I tell people about that place, and there's nothing wrong with it, it's a little pricey, is if your wife wants to go to Downtown Disney, you can park yourself there and smoke.
Yeah.
I think you could still smoke there. I haven't been there in a while. Yeah. Yeah.
I was there in March.
Okay. So yeah, you can, that's usually when I go to Orlando, I'm going to go to Corona. I mean, I'm usually going to just make the time and go to Corona.
Right.
But it's not a bad place either.
Yeah. I mean, I was down there with a bunch of buddies and, for some reason they wanted to go watch the Avenger movie and I'm just not into that kind of stuff. So they all went and watched the Avenger movie downtown Disney. And I went over to Sosa's and I just hung out at Sosa's. And, it's a cool spot because you get the guy, the husbands and the dads that just don't want to do whatever else the ladies are doing. So ladies go off and do their thing and you just get to kind of hang out and chit chat with all the husbands and the dads that are just kind of, you know, wanting to take a break. And it's a good time. Now you get to chat with people.
Yeah.
It's like a lot,
Main Street.
I don't think it always happens in the cigar shops like people think it does, but when you get to chat with just different people from all over the country and stuff like that, and everybody is super friendly there because, you know, they're actually getting to have a good time that they wouldn't have had otherwise in that spot. So it's kind of an interesting kind of scenario.
Yeah, it has that Main Street feel to it. I know Big Scott, one of our listeners, he's a place called John B. Hay in Virginia. It almost had that vibe in a lot of ways, too, the Sosa. A couple of comments here I want to just go through. Alan Rubin mentions the place that you used to be able to smoke in the Universal City Walk. And they said, yes, they closed that down. I used to go there. So yeah. I remember the visit we made, and it was closed, and I was highly disappointed on that. Yeah. So yeah, definitely. That was definitely a disappointment there, to say the least, with that when that happened. In fact, it's now you really can't even smoke in the parks anymore.
Yeah.
From what I've seen. So that's the way it is right now with that. So yeah, and I was, like I said, I wasn't really the rides guy either. So the one thing I'll say is that Universal, the City Walk area, there's some really good restaurants and stuff too. Mm-hmm. There's a movie theater. So there are, and you are near Corona Cigar. Mm-hmm. So, if you're going to be in the Universal Park area, I tell people it's probably the best place to park yourself. You want to be like, you don't want to have a car and you just want to go to Corona. it's an easy Uber ride. You know, right, Disney's going to be a little further out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But by you, it's Southern California where you go to those types of things.
That's where the big, you know, the big spots are, where you get to Disneyland and Universal Studios and things like that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, around here, it's more the ride driven type theme parks.
Yeah. The other thing I'll mention is, I don't know if I mentioned this, but, you know, living in Brooklyn, my grandparents lived a block away from Coney Island.
Okay.
But what the problem was, by the time I was old enough to go to those parks, it was already in a major decline, the whole area. So I never really spent a lot of time at Coney Island, unfortunately. And neighborhood was really going downhill. And some they have Coney Island had multiple amusement parks there. It wasn't just like one.
Right.
And some of them had already closed. So yeah, it was unfortunate. I did get to ride the Cyclone. So that was pretty. I wasn't like the Super Duper Loop, but didn't scar me for life. But it was a cool thing to go on that. And I think it was like 1977, so it's like 40 years ago I was on it.
Yeah, near me there's something somewhat similar, Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, which was it's at the beach of Santa Cruz. It's got the boardwalk and it's got rides and it's got a bunch of games and stuff like that. And they have concerts there and stuff like that. So there's lots of different stuff to do if you want to go to the beach or, you know, whatever. So it's a nice spot. And it's in, you know, the weather's fantastic most of the year. So yeah, it's a pretty nice spot.
Yeah, no, that's true. Someone mentioned Gatorland. I passed out at Gatorland.
Okay.
Dehydrated. I was dehydrated.
Oh, yeah, wow.
It was a big mistake. Yeah. And I was like I was younger, but I had nothing to eat. I had nothing to drink much except maybe one thing of water, and the heat was brutal that day.
Yeah.
And I've learned to hydrate at these parks after that. Yeah, it was Gatorland that happened at.
Yeah.
So and that's pretty cool. It's mostly an animal park with alligators there.
Mm.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on that subject? I think we beat that one to death.
Yep.
All right. Why don't we move into our final segment then?
All right. I'm going to do a quick break while you do the reads.
Absolutely. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Saca set out to create Puro Son Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saca's closely held values and attests in three simple words everything Saca wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion of Saca, they are a way of life. Ask for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, Muestra de Saca, Todos los Dias, and the recently released Sin Compromiso at your local tobacconist. And by M. Bombay Cigars. M. Bombay Cigars represent the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. M. Bombay Cigars are enrolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving it a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try the M. Bombay, Gaia, M. Cuba, and the newly released M. Esteli lines. M. Bombay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And by Caldwell Cigar Company. Caldwell Cigar Company launched in 2014 with a very simple mantra, create, innovate, ambition. Since day one, they have done things differently. They have challenged the industry norms to produce sticks that time and time again deliver on their promise. Look for Caldwell products or any number of their collaborations at your local retailer today. By Casa Cuevas Cigars. The Cuevas family has four generations of experience in cigar making. For many years, they have manufactured cigars for industry leaders out of their Las Lavas factory in the Dominican Republic. Now the Cuevas family brings their very own brand to market with Casa Cuevas Cigars. Try the Casa Cuevas Connecticut, Casa Cuevas Habano, Casa Cuevas Maduro, and the recently released Cuevas Reserva line. If they don't carry it, be sure to ask your local retail for Casa Cuevas cigars. Casa Cuevas cigars, from our casa to your casa. And then just a note on a Cattle Baron meet update. I have gone back to just eating lots of meat, and I think folks, I made a pilgrimage over to Five Guys this past weekend while bacheloring it. And I got to say, we talked about Five Guys a couple weeks ago on the show. They make a great burger and their fries are even better. So I have moved away from the Impossible Whoppers, Aaron, and I did go to Five Guys this week. So wanted to mention that. Okay, our final segment here, Aaron. Before we kind of get to the – I just have one thing I want to make a comment on with the Eric Wentworth interview. Did you notice the information that came out on the Kalianok factory? I don't know if we have Aaron. Aaron, you there?
I am here.
Okay, yeah. Did you notice the info that Eric said on the Kalianok factory? That was interesting.
Yeah.
That was Zangy.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. It was.
I wasn't aware of that either. I actually thought that was maybe coming out of Davidoff still. Mm. And now it's got me really. My wheels have been turning since he said that. So I want to go back and smoke those again now.
Yeah, I mean, I know Phil's really into the whole alchemy thing and stuff like that, so it does make sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
You would want to kind of experiment with that.
So. Yeah, yeah. I did not know that. I didn't know they would even disclose. They'd ever just maybe that. I don't know if they've disclosed it before, but that's the first I had heard that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it was always kind of undisclosed as to what that where they that came they, from.
So. I remember I asked Eric; he wasn't ready to disclose it at the time. Eric Hansen, that is. This is back at one of the trade shows. Mm-hmm. So, but he also, I really got to go back and smoke a couple of those now.
Yeah.
Because I'm really curious because it's probably been a couple of years since I've had one. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see now. I'm kind of very intrigued with that. So, we were actually, before the show, this actually also came up with Eric. We were talking a little about 2019 in the year in cigars. And it's been a topic, I think, among the media compound alumni.
Right.
That we've been talking about. And I think there's an overall consensus, for lack of a better word, sorry about that.
That's right.
The backup stopped going. That's okay. Okay. But yeah, the kind of a consensus that, you know, it's been a down year. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And we're talking about in regards to the quality of the cigars.
The quality of the cigars.
Flavor-wise, I guess, would be the way to say it.
Yeah. I noticed the trend. I thought the trend started late last year. Like coming out of last year's IPCB era, I started seeing there was some really good stuff, and then there was some really missed stuff. But it really carried over into this year right now for a lot of reasons. And you know, I've kind of been wondering what could be driving these types of things. With that. But here was my first. I have a few points I'll make, right, that I kind of started thinking about this. And then you can kind of counterpoint it or whatever and add some. So the first thing I'll say is this year at IPCPR, the big companies were pretty quiet.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Even from like general stamp, like Altadis did have some releases. I'll take Altadis out. I thought they had a pretty decent year. But General didn't have as many releases. A lot of releases were limited. Davidoff brought nothing to the table. There was nothing from Arturo Fuente. There was a lot less from Rocky Patel, and most of the Drew Estate was more on the infused end this year.
Yep.
So when you start getting those big players not bringing a lot to the table, and I know everyone's like, we love small batch and boutique, but the big companies still have some of the best access to the tobacco out there.
Right.
And they still make some. So I think that was a big factor I think innovation was really suffering this year from there.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe from a personal standpoint, the fact that Davidoff didn't really have any new releases this year, they've always brought something innovative to the table.
Yeah.
So, but the last 2 years, last year they brought back an old cigar, and this year they brought back, they didn't bring anything there, pretty much. The last major release they've had is the Late Hour. So, I mean, you're going back over a year and a half right now.
Yeah, most everything's like vault releases and things like that.
It's vault releases, yeah. Which some have been very good, and I think some of them have been very average to below average.
Yeah.
So I think that was a big factor with that. Mm-hmm. You know, I know people could say, you know, they critique Rocky Patel and stuff like that, but you know, at least when Rocky Patel would come out with eight or nine cigars, there were two or three of them that, you know, may hit the wall that were pretty good. So
right, right.
So I think that hurts too, that you have less of that going on.
No.
I think there's an over, and I've said this, I think the private label market's way oversaturated right now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's driving, if people are now making a lot of private label stuff, and it's sacrificing some of the innovation for the regular production stuff. That's where I'm kind of going with that.
Right.
You know, so I think there's some of that going on there right now. You know, and I looked at, like, for example, and they're a small company, but Moya Ruiz, for example, you know, they're coming out with these summer sausages and hand grippers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always thought they made really good Coeur line cigars. And that, you know, now that they're spending time on these limited runs and getting these limited cigars, I think it's hurting some of that right now.
Yeah.
So that was my second, thing with that. I think the third thing was, there is an uncertainty with 2020 right now with the whole substantial equivalence date moving up.
Yeah.
I thought that would have accelerated some of the innovation. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is that date change happened too late before the trade show. Otherwise we would have seen that.
Right.
So now I'm wondering, will we see some of these things pushed up until the, late this year? Will we see some late year releases is my question on that. Right. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's dry pipelines. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to hear the wells getting dry in terms of the pipelines. And there's some people hitting limitations with what they can do with blends right now and what they can do with sizes. I've heard this year. I heard it from several companies at the trade show. And that was the first time I started hearing that right now. I think there are other companies that have really good and healthy pipelines. I think there's companies that have a lot of these predicate stuff, but is this predicate stuff just like a rerun, you know?
Yeah.
Putting a new coat of paint on it or polishing it up and putting it out there right now.
Yeah, that could be it.
Yeah. And the last thing is, I think the marketing change, we've seen a lot of changes in marketing teams at these cigar companies. And I think it's hurting. You know, there's been a lot of, Altadis General and Davidoff have had major overhauls of their marketing teams.
Right.
In the last year. Mm-hmm. And they seem to still be ongoing. And who knows what's going to happen with Altadis in the next few months. So.
Right. Yeah, one of the things I was wondering about is, if it's possibly like, you know, some big players hoarding tobacco, making it tough for some of the smaller guys to be able to acquire it or having to acquire it at higher prices and things like that. You know, maybe someone like AJ Fernandez or something like that, or you're kind of forced either to buy from him or produce through him and things like that. You know, I wonder if that kind of stagnates things a little bit, makes it harder for people to get the tobaccos that they want to use to be able to make these blends, and they have to settle for, I'm not going to say inferior, but just lesser tobaccos, or they can't get the kinds that they want to be able to produce those blends. I don't know if that plays into it at all.
I do. And you may notice, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, I thought I heard about 4 or 5 years ago that a lot of the farms started getting bought up by some of the bigger players in Nicaragua.
Yeah, I think that was.
Yes. Yeah. So I think a lot of like independent farms were now bought up by some of these bigger players, mm-hmm. and it's hurt the flow of tobacco throughout Nicaragua.
Right.
So I have heard of companies saying that they used to be able to get this tobacco from this tobacco broker and they can't get it anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously it changes things a lot where they either sometimes some companies will discontinue a line. And what some companies will do is they'll substitute the stuff into the line right now with mm-hmm. something else. And I think we've seen inferior products come because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's still a lot of cigars that were released this year that I've yet to smoke, but, you know, just kind of basing it based on cigars that have been released earlier in the year and things like that, just from my personal experience, they haven't been as good as last year or previous years. So I think we kind of talked a little bit about it last week or the week before about, kind of the 90s, not a 90 article and, you know, kind of checking out what the scores look like year over year. Right. That was one of the things that would drive me to do it again is just kind of see like how do scores match up this year versus last year. So that'd be a good exercise just to see if the overall scores are down this year compared to the previous years. But I mean, we're still seeing lots of high scores from some of these sites. So it's tough to be able to tell if it's going to be a true comparison that way, or if there's only going to be a few sites that where you can like, all right, these are the sites that kind of really, you know, believe in the scoring systems, and we'll see how those scores actually match up over the previous years and things like that.
No, I agree. I totally agree with that. I definitely think that what I'm, you know, I think we talked about this last week too, that the higher scores are tending to go to the popular people.
Yeah.
So I I'll be honest, there's a couple of cigars that have come out that I've smoked them, and there's no way that these cigars are ready. There's no way these cigars should even be scoring a 90 right now.
Right.
And I'm seeing them scored at 94.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give an example of a cigar that I'm not saying it's a bad cigar. It just wasn't ready. It was Menelik. Menelik was not ready to smoke. Unless someone got a different Menelik than I was able to get. And I went to a few places to get it now. I'm not saying it's a bad cigar, but I just felt it wasn't ready right now.
Yeah.
That's not to pick on Nick at all. Because Nick's got an incredible track record, but I don't know. I see some stuff that was, I saw a lot of stuff shipped after the show quicker this year.
Right.
Than in previous years. And I'm trying to figure out if there's maybe still, especially out of Nicaragua, if there's still some uncertainty that people didn't want a chance leaving the stuff around.
Right.
So who knows if that's playing into it. You know, I'll say this, like, you know, Robert released a lot of stuff, and I thought for the most part, Robert's stuff was ready to, I'm not saying it was bad stuff or good stuff. It was ready to smoke. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Alan made a point about the market, my angle on the marketing, the changes in marketing. I think that does hurt some of the innovation. I understand it's not creating a blend, but look at, for example, like Casada. Mm-hmm. Like Terrence was creating these brands, right? Based on, like, he would go and I get work with Hostos, and they'd have these blends, and he'd try to match up a blend to some sort of a concept. And I think he did a really good job with that. And I think with some of these other companies with the marketing, I think it's hurting right now, and I think that's really lagging on.
Yeah.
You know, I go back to the Session cigar by CAO.
Right.
And I just remember the pitch they gave me at the trade show, like, well, people don't care about the blends.
Yeah.
Was that to me, and a lot of us heard that, like, I that can be further from the truth.
I'm probably in the minority here, and I don't really care about the blend. I just care about the finished product.
Right.
You know, I'm not going to chase something because it has a particular tobacco in it or anything like that. That's not my focus. I'm really just interested in how the cigar smokes, what the flavor profile is like, and things like that. So to me, I'm okay with that. But I know for, you know, most of the people in the media and, you know, social media guys, they're focused on brands. They focused on, you know, tobacco varietals and things like that. So that's a driver for them. But just for me, it's not that big of a criteria for what I'm looking to smoke.
Yeah. I agree with you. I'm actually the same way. But I do see, like, a lot of the guys who are in my shop, they're not social media people. Mm-hmm. They're probably in the demographic of the shop I smoke at is probably 45 to 60 is the male demographic. So these aren't guys following Facebook for cigars. They're not following Cigar Coop for cigars, okay? Yeah. They're not following Half Wheel. But when these events come into town, there is – and this is the part where I understood what Rocky Patel was saying at when they announced PCA, I do see them want to learn about this. When the brand owners come in and they start talking about their brands and they start talking about the tobaccos they're using, I do see the consumers get engaged in that perspective. Mm-hmm. So that's why when I heard the comment from CAO on that, it kind of hit. I just disagreed with it because that was the scene that came to mind was this 45 to 60 year old demographic really interested in learning about what they were smoking.
Right.
But for me, I'm not going to chase down, oh, this is a Lancero, this is a Nick Maloa cigar, this is a Steve Saka cigar.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's the case there as well.
Yeah.
I'll put you on the spot. You may not know the answer to this. What have you seen? Like, is the scoring overall down on developing palates from what, I mean, is that what you're seeing?
I haven't done like the actual, calculations. But I think, based on what we've done so far, just kind of, you know, mental notes, I think it is down. I know John for sure believes his scoring is probably down a whole point this year so far over previous years. At the end of this year, I will do the calculation to figure out, you know, this year compared to last year and the year before, because I want to know what that looks like, and I'll share it out. I have no problem sharing that information with everybody. But I would say that I feel that it is down. But like I said, you know, we're still. I know we're getting into October, but it's still early in the cigar year since most stuff gets released around the trade show. So it's still kind of early to be able to say that. So we'll see how it, you know, fleshes out. But I think that will be end up being the case, that this will be a little bit down from last year or the year before that even.
I looked at where Coop was before the show for this. We're down 0.8 of a point, but I'm not ready to, but I haven't reviewed a lot of the post show stuff yet.
Yeah.
Because again, the way I'm kind of working it, surprise, surprise, if you're shark at the trade show, it's next year. So
yeah.
I'm still kind of going through a lot of the stuff from last year's show and earlier release stuff for this year. Mm-hmm. But I'm down 8, but I'm attributing that more to how I'm scoring it than a quality of a release yet. However, I have smoked some stuff post-show.
Right.
And I'm having a tough time coming up with a lot of 91s even on this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which one a couple of years ago, 91 was an where I was scoring was an average cigar score. So, I do think there's something going on there. And do you think that this carries over into 2020, or does the curve come back up again?
I think it's entirely possible that the trend continues that way. I mean, you know, if you know, talking about, you know, what SE looks like and things like that, that may be a, you know, just an indicator of things to come. So it's entirely possible that that's the way it works out.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, you know, yet the highly anticipated Baca still to come out in November, so that, you know, that might be a little bit of a bump for some of the numbers, and I don't know if that starts to trend moving things forward, but I don't know. I think it's still. Time will tell.
Yeah, we're gonna have to forecast like consensus cigars this year, and see what could you imagine if Saka finishes second again with Sober Mesa Brulee to Baca?
Yeah,
I mean, that's a realistic scenario.
Yeah,
I think if Skip gets that out like early November,
right?
It's gonna probably be the favorite. I think if it comes out early December, it might not be
right. Yeah, I think that would be the case.
Imagine if he got – that would be hysterical. That would be hysterical right now.
Yeah.
Now, I mentioned some of the – I thought the big companies, you know, had some down years. Are you seeing it from the smaller companies as well, or the mid-sized companies?
Yeah, I mean, I think – like I said, I think it's overall. I mean, I think one of the better cigars that I smoked this year was the Warhawk. We were talking about that earlier, and that's from one of the big companies. So it's interesting that that's kind of how it's played out so far. I've reviewed the Brulee. It just hasn't posted yet because we don't have everybody in yet, and I didn't think it was that great. I thought it was fairly average. So we'll have to see. I mean,
I wonder if you'll get the hate mail like I got with us.
Yeah, we'll see. People won't understand the score, so I'm kind of insulated from that, I think.
Right.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, he got 94 the other day, so you know, there's going to be, you know, he's going to get the high scores on some of the sites anyway, so you know, the low scores probably get forgotten as it goes.
That's they because they try to forget about them too.
Yeah.
The lower scores, because we are these construction issues or are these flavor issues?
It's flavor issues for me. Right. Yeah. I haven't seen. I wouldn't say I've seen a drop in construction. I mean, if I saw that, I would be like, yeah, there's something really weird going on. If that's the case, I don't think I've seen a drop in construction overall from this year from previous years. It's definitely a flavor thing.
Is it flavor because the cigars have been rushed out too fast and they're young, or are they just not good blends?
I haven't felt that they're like a lot of sharp flavors or anything like that. I just feel that they're kind of like, they're just like, or maybe we're just getting spoiled over, you know, the level of cigars that are out, and they all seem to be at the same level. And there's not as many standouts compared to what the average pack is. Maybe that could be the case too, but it's definitely not a construction thing that I would pair it to. But I also don't feel like, you know, I'm getting, you know, bitterness, ammonia flavors, and I'm not getting any of that. So I don't feel like it's a rushing thing.
Do you think it could be that, and here's another theory I didn't mention when I was giving some of my reasons. Do you think it could be like a lot of these blends that are getting released are, you know, look, and I've seen people go through in a, I don't want to say a blending process, but the evaluation process of cigars where they're smoking, like, they're saying they're blenders, but what are they doing? They're smoking a whole bunch of samples, right?
Right.
And they're smoking maybe blend A, B, and C. And then there's maybe within A, B, and C, there's A prime, you know, B prime, C prime, where they're variants, right?
Right.
And one of them is making the cut and that gets released. And then there's these other ones, which are maybe not as good, but they're probably still around. And there's still blends that they can use. And they're probably still blends that would conform to substantial equivalence. Do you think that maybe a lot of the companies dipping into that bucket and maybe releasing cigars that way?
Yeah, that's entirely possible. I mean, just to be able to, you know, kind of stay in the forefront of people's minds and having a new release for that year, but they didn't actually weren't actively working on something to do that. I could totally see in that being a possibility that said, oh, you know, this is a good enough blend.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything else kind of targeted for this time frame, but now I'll put it out, just kind of keep the name out and keep the buzz going about the brand. That's a possibility, yeah.
Yeah. So we mentioned some disappointments. Was there a couple, you mentioned Warhawk was one of those. Are there any other surprises that you've had this year? Maybe someone stepped their game up.
I thought the JSK Tyrannical Buck,
that was a great
Maduro
cigar.
Was a really good cigar. And I'm not saying that like I didn't expect it to be a good cigar. I'm just saying like compared to the most, you know, a fairly average year, that's more of a standout along with that Warhawk. I mean, those are two cigars I thought were pretty good.
Yeah, the Tyrannical Buck actually scored very well. That Maduro scored very well. And I reviewed the Toro, but I've smoked the Petites as well, and they are really good. I still have to review the Connecticuts. So but the Connecticut was good as well.
Yeah, I need to smoke that still as well.
He's right. That Connecticut, when we interviewed him, he said that Connecticut's stronger than the Zlatno Sanz. He's right.
Okay.
It's a strong Connecticut, yeah. I thought the Maduro was stronger.
Yeah.
Well, I would agree with that as well. And then the HVC stuff I've had has been pretty good as well.
Yeah, I have that coming up. I have not smoked the Series A yet, so I'm interested in doing that. But yeah, I mean, those two I think are the only ones that I feel like are kind of ahead of the pack so far.
I do think some of I did really like that H. Upman Hispaniola Mint one. I did like that a lot. That was something that was really, I thought, different that came to the table this year. I haven't reviewed it yet, but I did like that. I thought Altadis actually had a really good year this year.
I think when I smoke through some of the other stuff, I'll be interested to see. Yeah. But yeah, it's, I mean, starting out with the Warhawk is a good place to start. So it's, you know, that's a good pace.
So you thought I was hard on the Warhawk, or you thought I was going to score it higher?
I just thought it would be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not bashing your score.
No.
I'm just, you know, because a 90 is a good score. Just to, you know, kind of, it was a more of a standout for me. So I was just kind of wondering how it was going to score for you.
I still thought it was one of the better Connecticut. I really like that Crux Epicure Salomon a lot. That's been the one I've liked as far as Connecticut. Technically, not a, you know, it's a different size, but I did like that one a lot.
Right. Yeah.
And then the Jagernorsa Leaf stuff, I could say it's a little bit of a, I have been a little, so one really impressed me, and the other two, I think the jury's still out because I just thought they were a little wet when I got them.
Yeah, I haven't smoked any of the new Jagernorsa stuff this year. I did smoke the new Warped, and I was fairly disappointed in that cigar.
That was the Selección de Valle.
Yeah, so that was a bit of a disappointment for me. I was expecting a little bit more from that, but it wasn't the case.
What did you think of the Davidoff Especialis return?
I had never smoked the original, so I can't really compare
me
it
either,
to that.
Yeah.
I just thought it was okay. I didn't think it was anything special. It was just kind of a fairly average cigar to me. I think I scored it like in mid to high five or something like that.
Excuse me.
So.
Yeah, I was disappointed. And, you know, I was actually thinking of the Sochi with that cigar because, again, seven tobaccos. And right. They never disclosed the Sochi blend that we were just talking about. But the Sochi was a better cigar from everything I remember about that Sochi when I was smoking them. So yeah. I don't know. I was quite underwhelmed right now with that cigar. You know, Charlie had given it the 99.
Yeah.
It was funny. I went and read Charlie's review afterwards. And he kind of wrote a point. It was like he kind of didn't like the fact they were promoting the 99 because he felt no matter how you look at it, it was a different cigar.
Right.
Because it was, yeah. You know, it's 15 years later. Yeah. So it didn't have the age. So I kind of understand what he was saying on that point.
Right. Oh, I will bring up another cigar I thought that was pretty good. It was the new Nestor Miranda. Is it the Signature Selection?
The Special Selection.
Special Selection.
I thought that was pretty good.
That was a pretty cigar. That was one of the best cigars I smoked out of my father in the last few years.
I would totally agree with that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking about that with Skip the other day. We were talking about how that was a really good cigar that came out this year.
Yeah, I think like I said, I was almost ready. I didn't want to quite say it. I actually thought they were smoking better than when they discontinued it.
Mm.
But there was a point where I thought those cigars smoked really good, and then they went downhill.
Right.
I used to have. I remember towards the before they discontinued, I was having a lot of construction issues with those cigars too.
Mm.
Especially because I used to smoke a lot of those cigars. That was like a go-to cigar for me. And then,
right.
I don't know. I don't think they smoked it, but this one, yeah, I agreed. It was, I thought it was one of the better My Father's cigars for sure.
Yeah.
The new Calaveras, I thought, was actually good out of My Father this year, the 19.
Hmm.
That was the red band one. Yeah.
Right.
So, that one was pretty good as well. I did smoke, I just smoked the EPC limited edition,
mm-hmm.
the inch. Great, yep. Great flavor, but I think I sent you a picture of it. I had a really bad burn. I mean, I don't know how so I can burn that bad. It was all
right.
So I'm chalking it up to one, but boy, that burn. I have another one I'm going to smoke. That burn was awful.
Yeah.
It was, you know, I'm still trying to figure out what went wrong with that.
Right.
All right. Any other comments on that?
I don't think so.
Okay. So, again, before we wrap it up, I think we mentioned Lars Teton's next week. You're going to want to mm-hmm. tune into that for show for sure. And the week after, Sebastian from Cavalier Geneva.
Yes.
Still got to finalize. I think he's confirmed, but I always reconfirm before him. But I haven't reconfirmed with him yet on that. Yep. So, stay tuned on that.
Yep.
All right. Yeah, we got this one in under 2 hours. I'm going to actually get to bed at a good hour tonight.
Nice.
I'm actually sleeping, by the way, 6 to 7 hours a night now. I've really been – I was getting away from that again.
Yeah.
But I'm disciplining myself a lot more now with that. So
Good.
Yeah, it's when I get rest, I do feel better. So
yeah.
I'm smoking one less cigar a night, though.
There you go.
That's the problem. I wanted that third cigar. Yeah. All right. But, again, thanks to our audience for tuning in, our loyal audience. That's going to wrap up Primetime, episode 111 into the Annals of History for this Thursday, September 26, 2019. It's still September 26 on the East Coast. Yep. We'll see everybody next week. Have a great night, everybody.
See you guys.